God made the first man. His name is Adam. God made the first thing. It's called Atom. Coincidence? Let's take a closer look.
Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Welcome, welcome to another episode of the Council of Trent podcast. Today, we have a special guest joining me. I am, of course, your host, Trent Horn, Catholic apologist and speaker here at Catholic Answers. You might have heard of Articles of Faith, the Articles of the Faith, what we believe in, and the Creed, and other documents like that. But I wonder if you've heard about Particles of Faith, a book that's been recently published by a friend of the Catholic Answers Apostolate, who has agreed to sit down with us to talk about that ever-present struggle, or faux struggle, I would say, that another term I'd use here is it's much ado about nothing, the mythical war between science and religion, the conflict between faith and reason. We've got someone who's got credentials on both sides of that to sit down and talk with us. Her name is Dr. Stacy Trusenkos. She has a PhD in chemistry from Penn State University, a master's degree in dogmatic theology from Holy Apostles College and Seminary. She worked as a chemist for DuPont and the Lycra and Teflon businesses, but left that career to raise children. She's the mother of seven children and converted to Catholicism in 2006. She now teaches and writes from home. She just recently gave a wonderful opening address at our Catholic Answers Conference on the theme of faith and science, and she's here to speak with us today. Dr. Trusenkos, welcome to the Council of Trent.
Hi, Trent. Thank you so much for having me on. It was great to meet you at the conference, and it's wonderful to talk to you today.
Oh, absolutely. So let's jump right into it. I loved reading through your book, and I think, you know, the title, the design, everything is very reader-friendly and enjoyable. As someone myself who has always been interested in popular science, researching science as a layperson to understand all the different fields, I really enjoyed Particles of Faith. What is the book about, and why did you set out to write it?
Well, the book is about just what you said, fixing that faux struggle, as you put it, but that people think that there is this conflict between faith and science. And so I was really picturing the audience so that this book wouldn't be so formal as a faith and science, more scholarly book, but just as a conversation, like I would be talking to someone sitting across the table with me, just asking questions. So I was trying to answer questions I have been asked. The reason I wrote it, though, was, and the reason I got involved in this whole area of faith and science, is because I truly did not know there was a conflict. I mean, I was non-religious. I was pretty against religion as a practicing chemist, but it was my love of chemistry that ultimately compelled me to admit there is a God, and my love of logic that led me to the Catholic Church. And then when I got to the Catholic Church, my chemistry having led me to Christ, I was actually very surprised to learn that young Catholics and all Catholics, you know, here and there, thought there was this conflict, because I never even thought there was, not even when I wasn't Catholic.
Well, you're in good company, actually. According to the Pew Research Center, this was done back in 2009, 51% of scientists, so a little more than half, believe that God or some higher power exists, and while 41% of scientists reject both of those concepts. So while there is a significantly higher percentage of atheists among scientists, it's not anything overwhelming like that. So one thing you might be interested in, our listeners as well, when there are, and you could speak to this also maybe from your professional experience as a scientist and a chemist, a lot of people think, well, if you're just a really, you know, if you're a scientist and you study science, that just naturally kind of leads you to atheism. There's a book by Elaine Eklund called Science Versus Religion, What Scientists Really Think. And she traces that rejection of religion is really found more in a lot of older scientists who were already atheists, and then they just decided to become scientists.
Interesting. Yeah. And it, you know, that is a very interesting statistic and book, because it was actually the practicing Catholics in my chemistry lab who lived that life of faith openly it was actually their testimony that gave me that confidence when I said, hey, you know, I want a moral code. I want the truth. I need religion. Science doesn't have the answer for everything. I remembered how they lived and I wanted what they had. Like, I couldn't put my finger on it, but I saw the way they lived their lives. They had a peace and a joy and a confidence that I knew I didn't have. And so it was actually the Catholics in my chemistry lab who showed me how it's done.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about your work in the lab and how that kind of crosses over with your faith. Because you mentioned this in your talk at the Catholic Answers Conference. It comes up a lot in your book, Particles of Faith. This may seem like a pedantic question, but I think it's one it's important people ask because they don't give it very much thought. Why are atoms, A-T-O-M-S, why are atoms such a big deal?
Because everything is made up of atoms. The atom in science is probably the thing that we understand the best when it comes to all the sciences, chemistry, physics, biology, the physical sciences. We know more about the atom than just about anything. It has been greatly understood in the last 200 years to the point of going from classical physics to quantum mechanical physics. And we understand atoms so well now, if you doubt what I'm saying, just punch your cell phone. We can communicate around the world with the touch of a screen. We can send pictures and videos. That's all about materials chemistry at its core, and learning how to put atoms together and how to manipulate them and how to send electrons and electromagnetic radiation where we want it to go. And so it's a big deal when it comes to faith, because when we pray the creed that we believe God created everything, you have to get your head around the fact that God made atoms. And when you look at the periodic table and learn about why it's structured the way it is, it really becomes overwhelming to think that right now in your body and the air you're breathing and everything you're seeing, that's all about understanding atoms. Your body's made up of atoms. And when you realize that God made everything and you know more about the atom, you really get a deeper insight into what the handiwork of God really means, that he created all of this.
So I think a lot of people might have, because atoms, it's a funny thing. We look at a table, you look at a chair, you look at your cell phone, your computer right now, if you're listening to this podcast, and we just recognize objects around us. And so sometimes we think God created everything. It's like, he dumped out the toy bin and all these suns and moons and stars and people, the action figures just kind of fall into place. We don't take a lot of time to think of what they're made of or how that kind of points back to God. Things like atomic forces, for example, that, I mean, there are paradoxes related to atoms and things where we've had to grow an understanding, and also things a lot of people, I'm sure you can appreciate this, that are taught in chemistry class, like in high school chemistry, that are actually not that correct. It's just kind of a stepping stone to learn about them. Can you tell us more about that?
Are you talking about quantum mechanics?
Yeah, but both like how atoms function and they relate to the world. Yeah. Like one, things that we don't, you know, as a lot of lay people, we kind of misunderstand, and how things that we don't understand sort of point back to God.
Yeah, one thing I like to point out to people, you know, especially when I'm talking to high school students about faith and science, even the most ardent atheist has to view the world the way Catholics do. He has to assume the world is created, and you'll hear the word created sneak into a lot of the dialogue, even though people don't believe in God, they say created. Well, who created? But we have to view the world as this ordered, logical mechanism, you know, by which everything is following the laws of nature, because if we didn't view it that way, we wouldn't be able to go out and make observations and form theories about how things work. And we also have to believe that we are capable of forming abstract theories based on observations, that we ourselves are rational creatures. And so all of that is accounted for beautifully in Catholic doctrine. And that was the very doctrine that was behind the cultural recognition of this in the Middle Ages when modern science emerged. It emerged from a Christian culture for a reason. Mm-hmm. And it's no less so today. today, and I love telling students this in class because it changes everything for them. When you're studying science, as hard as it's going to get, and it is going to get hard, you're studying the handiwork of God. You're not just reading a chemistry book. You're not just deriving physics equation. You're getting a firsthand look into the mind of God and how God created everything that's around you.
Mm-hmm. So the idea here is that the more and more you read and more you study as a scientist, that you get deeper and deeper into the mystery, but it doesn't suddenly just jump off a cliff and say, oh, well, this stuff happens for no reason. There's no causal order here. This is where things just completely become chaotic and make no sense. So as a chemist, like when you get down to the atomic level, what you're finding is an intricate order at the very fabric of the universe.
Absolutely. Because even though atoms are like the fundamental building blocks of elements and matter, they themselves are structures made up of smaller parts, you know, like quarks and electrons and the quarks that make the protons and the neutrons. They're made of smaller parts. And when you get into theoretical physics, then there's unbelievable. I mean, that's a whole entire new field unto itself, all based on the order that is discovered at the subatomic level. And so it goes on and on and on as far as we can get. Some scientists today will challenge that and say that in the quantum realm beyond which we can measure, that everything is probabilistic. But that gets into some of the nuances of what was meant by the Heisenberg uncertainty principle.
Well, I know that might jar our listeners, but I am a big science fan. I'm happy to break this stuff down with you. It's definitely, that's a direction that I wanted to go. So let's continue the conversation. Before we hop into that category, because I want to talk about quantum physics, do you think it's interesting that there are atheists who will object to Christians believing in things they can't see or observe, God, the soul, and yet they'll put theories on things that in principle could never be observed, not even just atoms or electrons. And we have electron microscopes, but like a quark or a string, like there's going to be a building block of reality that in principle you could never observe. You just have to postulate. Do you see an inconsistency there?
Oh, I definitely see an inconsistency. I mean, we can't really even see electrons because we don't even know where they are. That's why we talk about them in terms of probabilities. But we work with them all the time. And St. Thomas, I was laughing yesterday because I was listening to St. Thomas play in my car when I was driving, because LibriVox has this free recording of the Summa. And St. Thomas was going on about how the difference between faith and science is the difference between what is seen and unseen, that scientific things are usually based on observation, but there's a point where you hand off. And when you get into the realm of things that are unseen, there's some faith involved there. And that's no less true for a scientist, because a scientist who studies still takes information on a kind of faith from what's been learned before him or her, because no scientist goes out and redoes every experiment and tests it. But even when you get into the details of science, there's a point beyond which, even in the scientific method, you stop saying these are observations and you move on to abstract thought and make theories. So theories are not facts. Theories are not laws. Theories are our explanations of trying to put all the pieces together. So we do have to, all I'm saying is it's really great to be able to think both ways. It's terrible to think that the only way you can reason is with pure observable facts.
Right, because
that's so limiting.
Oh, of course, because as you're showing in chemistry, physics, quantum physics, the most fundamental elements of reality are not observable. I liked the point you brought up too about how scientists themselves, much of what they believe is they have received testimony from scientists who worked before them and accept their observations. It reminds me, at the end of Paul's letter to the Romans, he talks about being instructed by those who were in Christ before him. And that's where most of those people say, well, you only believe you're Catholic because your parents said so. And actually, you and I are converts, actually, so that would be an exception. Right. But for most people, yeah, you've learned this from your family, but there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, with science, people will say, oh, well, E equals MC squared. And if you say, well, how do you know that? I'd say maybe one in 10,000 or 100,000 people could sit down with a formula and prove to you why the theory, this part of Einstein's theory of relativity is true. Everyone else says, well, my eighth grade science teacher told me so.
Exactly. And even if you did that, you would have to name your starting assumptions.
Absolutely. So let's talk then about chemistry. You study atoms, electrons, and that starts to get you into the quantum realm, which I, as a big Marvel fan, will make a shout out to Ant-Man and the Wasp, really introduced the quantum realm into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which will be helpful in the next Avengers movie. But yeah, when you study quantum physics, read about thought experiments and about things that are in quantum physics, it starts to get fast and loose pretty quickly. What exactly is quantum physics?
Okay, well, yeah, we'll do the brief discussion. When high school, when you look at the periodic table, you're looking at quantum mechanics.
Right.
High school students learn about the atom, and they learn about something most people are familiar with, the wave-particle duality of matter, of subatomic particles. That goes back to the 1900s. Scientists knew they could observe, so this is observing a law, that atoms release or absorb energy in fixed amounts. That's where the word quantum came from, fixed amounts. And there's all kinds of experiments where they're like, yeah, this is really a thing. Heisenberg proposed this dual nature of matter, that there was this quantum of energy and that matter also seemed to move in both waves, but then there was also momentum, so it had mass, so therefore it was a particle. He proposed that with subatomic particles that are moving so fast, we don't know the location.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you don't mind me jumping in here, but we had electrons and chemistry and physics in action. Apparently, a storm has broken out where Dr. Trusenko says that knocked out the power, so we lost our Skype connection, but has been restored over a cell phone that I think is charged enough for the remainder of our interview. So Stacey, let's thank you for staying with us. We do pray the storm doesn't get too much more severe. The Heisenberg uncertainty principle, do go on.
Yes. As I was saying about quantum physics, we don't know everything. We haven't got the ability to always predict what electrons are going to do. But back in the early 1900s, there was this new understanding about the behavior of matter at the subatomic level. And so that's where, when it was noticed that there was a certain fixed amount of energy that atoms can absorb and release, there came into our concept this idea of quantum theory based on that fixed amount of energy. Well, Heisenberg called it the uncertainty principle, and it was also based on the Schrodinger equation for the wave function. But what it is fundamentally is a probability. So electrons are very tiny and they're moving around very fast and they seem to be moving in very fixed places most of the time. But we can't like say, okay, everybody stop moving and let us measure where you are. So it doesn't work like that in nature. Like God's got everything moving all the time. So we think of the atom now with the nucleus and then the electron cloud. And that's what students are taught in high school, this electron cloud, but it's based on probabilities. But they never meant to say, so move forward to today, there's this Copenhagen interpretation, which was born of Niels Bohr's thought. And it's taken today to mean that at this quantum level in subatomic particles, that things are probabilistic by nature. And what it was originally that you got to do, you know, work through the equations to understand, it didn't mean that things are ontologically random and probabilistic. It just was an operational problem. It meant that the best we can do is form these probabilities. And therefore, so now moving into theology, this is where Father Stanley Yawkey's work impressed me so much. He says that the operational was mistaken for the ontological, meaning just because we can't measure something exactly doesn't mean that it doesn't take place exactly. And so that ties into all these other things like this question of free will and neuroscience and the mind and body. A lot of people thought that with the invent of quantum theory that free will was rescued, because if everything's probabilistic fundamentally and random, then things aren't strictly determined as people thought they were with classical physics. But my response to that is, no, we still need to believe that God created a thoroughly, consistently interacting totality with laws and order and cause and effect all the way down, not just at that realm where we can't measure. We still need to believe that God did that. The thing is, we just don't look for answers to free will in physics. Free will is a spiritual power.
Right, because people will say, I mean, prior to the development of quantum physics, with classical physics, you know, with Newtonian macro objects, you know, things like billiard balls and tennis balls. I mean, in physics, it's easy to think of a round, bouncy thing to wrap your head around it. You know, when you knock the billiard balls, if you just measured them exactly, you would know, and you knew the force and the equation, you could predict where everything went. And so the idea here is, oh, well, if we could just predict everything in the universe, we know what you are going to do as well. Well, you got the quantum world, but I see your point that that doesn't give us, you know, the quantum world is one thing we can't measure or predict because of its indeterminate or probabilistic nature. But for me, yeah, I don't see that as saying, oh, you have free will. Why? Well, because the quantum world is random. Well, if my actions are determined by other things, that's not free, that's bad. But if my actions are just pure randomness, that's not much better. That's not being free. That's just chaos.
Yes. And it like either way you go with it, there's a difficulty in making sense of free will. The only way there's no difficulty in making sense of why we have free will is through the Catholic view of the world. Hmm. Okay, God created everything, visible and invisible. There's a spiritual realm and there's a physical realm, and the human person is rational with a rational soul with intellect and free will. The human person's also a body that needs to use the senses to take in information. I mean, this is, hello, the scientific method. This is where the scientific method came from, because we are both rational and have five senses. So, you know, I love it. I'm not exaggerating. It was thrilling to me to learn about this stuff because I understood myself so much better. I understood, because I'd kind of always thought of myself as just a collection of atoms and molecules.
Right.
I understood, it was so freeing and liberating to understand that I have a rational soul. I can make choices. I can chart my own path. And it was also daunting because then I realized the weight of that. I have to make good choices.
Right.
And then I wanted to learn everything I could about Catholic teaching because I needed to know how to make good choices.
Right. And on a side note, a lot of this, when we're getting into quantum physics, theoretical physics, it's all very speculative. You mentioned the Copenhagen interpretation of quantum physics because people have the equations, they have the observations, but then it's kind of up to different people to decide, well, what does it all mean? How does it go together? The Copenhagen interpretation is a common one, but there are others. There's the Bohm de Broglie model that says there are these hidden variables. And so there may indeed be things that they are determinate. We're just not able to discover their outcome because of these hidden variables, if I'm correct.
Yes. And, you know, if you say that in a room full of physicists today, they'll kind of scoff because...
Not a fan of the model.
The general consensus today is that the hidden variables theory is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I kind of take a different view, a theological, so I call it the theological interpretation of quantum mechanics.
Mm.
I take a different view altogether. I can accept that there are hidden variables we will never be able to discover. I can accept that there's a limit to our human knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a point beyond which it's not even worth asking the question because we can't find the answer to it.
Right.
I can accept that, but I can also accept at the same time that just because I can't measure beyond a certain point, things are still ordered. I mean, that only makes sense if everything else from the atom up follows laws of physics and laws of nature. It doesn't make any sense to say, well, beyond that realm where we can't measure, things just stop following laws of physics. No, they still do. We just can't get there.
Right.
And I mean, that kind of understanding, that kind of sanity about our human limits, it actually also plays a big role in the evolution debate.
Mm-hmm. Right, which I'll definitely have to have you back on for a future discussion. And then heads up to our listeners, there have been talks, I cannot give all of the details, but talks about maybe doing a a debate on creation evolution or debate about the age of the earth with the two of us involved in this mm-hmm. podcast, with other guests and others who are not mentioned at this time, but stay tuned for future details on that. One last question I have as we close out our time together. You mentioned him earlier. I was hoping you'd talk about him more. Father Stanley Yockey and his work in showing how Christianity was the mother of natural science, of science, and helping to remedy, you know, your views and other people's views and understanding the harmony rather than the conflict between religion and science.
Yes, I don't know. It's definitely providential. I discovered Father Yockey's work because when I decided to begin a program of study in dogmatic theology, in my very first class, his book, The Savior of Science, was the very first book I was assigned to read. And it blew me away. I mean, imagine I'm a chemist who wasn't religious. I decide to convert. I become Catholic. I'm sitting in bed holding a newborn. And I read this book that from a priest and a physicist that says, science, the science I love so much, was born of Christianity. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was emotional because I just had a baby, but I was bawling because I was just so moved by that.
Right.
And I thought my whole life makes sense. But I've since started promoting Father Yockey's work because he was also sad at the end of his life that he felt like a lot of his points didn't get across.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not really adding to his research, but I'm trying very hard to communicate his ideas to this new generation.
Well, I'm excited for that and look forward to your future work on that and other subjects with the intersection of faith and science. Can you please tell our listeners where they can find out more about you, your books, your speaking, and all the other work that you're involved in?
Yes, at my website, it's just stacytrasenkos.com. And if you spell the name even close to right, hopefully it'll come up on Google.
Right. And then I'd also recommend for our listeners, you can go and check out Catholic Answers at shop.catholic.com. We should probably have Dr. Trasenkos' talk from our Catholic Answers conference up online. You can also catch many of her appearances on Catholic Answers Live, on our radio archive on the website at catholic.com. And if you're interested in more about free will, my talk on the conference actually dealt with scientific objections to free will, specifically in neuroscience. You can also check out the recording of that talk. Should be available here in the next few weeks at catholic.com. Stacey, thank you so much for stopping by the Council of Trent podcast.
Oh, thank you. It's so wonderful to talk to you, Trent.
Absolutely. And thank you all for stopping by as well. I hope you will check out some more of our bonus content this week and refer the podcast to your other friends, family members, coworkers, whoever it may be, so they can learn more about explaining, defending the Catholic faith, or at least being equipped or being edified. The podcast, I think, might even be helpful for people you know who are not Catholic or not religious, but just want to hear another voice who's willing to take a reasonable and empathetic view towards some of the most vexing questions facing us today. So I hope you will do that. Rate the podcast online, share it with others, and become a premium subscriber to make the podcast more widely available and to have access to more content at TrentHornPodcast.com. Thank you guys for listening, and I hope you have a blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.